Are you gay?
Geeky?
Just enjoy hearing your good Judy's dish about the latest in pop culture?
Well, then you're in luck.
The boys of Flame On are here for you.
In every episode, we discuss the topics that entrance us.
Whether it's comics, TV,
movies,
drag queens,
or video games,
we've got you covered.
So, if you're ready for your gay and geeky slice of pop culture life,
then sit back and get ready to
Flame On!
Hi, this is Taylor.
And Hannah from the hit comedy true crime podcast, Drunk Women Solving Crime.
And this week we're sponsored by Now, where you can stream all episodes of the new Sky original, Sweet Pea. This deviously twisted coming-of-rage story stars Ella Purnell. She plays Rhiannon, a quiet wallflower on a darkly comedic and intoxicating journey of self-discovery with deadly consequences.
Coming-of-rage is a genre I can definitely get on board with. Everything in her life turns upside down when Rhiannon is pushed over the edge and suddenly the wallflower is gone. And in its place is a young woman capable of anything.
Stream all episodes of New Sky Original Sweet Pea on Now.
What's going on, everybody? Pat DeBear here, and we are back again. It is October. Dear Lord, where has this year gone? Hoy vey. But we are back to discuss, disseminate, and dishevel ourselves about pop culture in the month of October 2024. I'm being joined in the soggy, but thankfully okay East Coast by Eric.
Hello.
Hey there. How was your hurricane time?
For me, it was fine. I mean, nothing really happened at the house. Half of the backyard fence is down, but if that's the extent of the damage, then for us, I know there's lots of people who... There's devastation on the west coast of Florida. And I'm lucky enough that all that happened to me was I lost power for like 5 or 6 hours. But everything's back up for me, so.
Good. Well, we're glad that that it was minimal for you. That's what we like to hear. Want to make sure that that you're safe. And, you know, we hope that others affected by it, get repaired, recovered, get back up on their feet ASAP, especially after Helene did all that damage in its path. On the West Coast, we are joined by Brian.
It is I, Lord of the Pine, I don't know, something. Pine Forests. Sure, I like that. Should have thought of a title first.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. I've been watching a lot of Rings of Power. I've been watching a lot of Rings of Power because that just finished season two. I've been watching a lot of Tolkien, like Nerd of the Rings recaps of different parts of Tolkien that I never read. And if you're a Tolkien fan or you like Rings of Power or Lord of the Rings, go look up Nerd of the Rings on YouTube. The guy, person, I don't know what his gender is. He's amazing. So really great at distilling Tolkien's very biblical writing style down into something really nice and succinct. So it's good stuff. You should watch it.
All right. Good to know. A little plug for more nerdy content out there. Well, we are going to get this roast a cooking. It is the month of October. BJ is currently getting ready to jaunt to the West Coast for a birthday celebration. Our last episode dropping just before his birthday. We're recording right before his birthday. And this episode will drop on my birthday. And I'm excited because I'm getting ready for mostly a staycation, but might go to Minnesota for a couple of days. Because why not? I mean, honestly.
Curling? You're going up to curl? Is that where you're headed? Aw.
No, but when I was like, I think I might just take a trip to like St. Paul, Minneapolis, like that area. And the first thing that I thought about was, can I go by Paisley Park? Can I drive to Lake Minnetonka and not bathe myself in the waters of Lake Minnetonka? But do a lot of Prince related stuff, a lot of purple rain.
I was going to say, okay, yeah. You should. No, you should. If you're there, you got to do it.
Oh, of course, of course. I think that I'm going to do that. I think I'm going to do like a 2-day drive over to Minneapolis, St. Paul area. Some Twitter people that I know and I've chatted with, I'm like, fuck it, why not? Go out there. Go to Seattle. Going to be in Brian's neck of the woods in just under a month. Go see our other pod dog, Ms. Madeline. And then it looks like I'm actually going to be going to Denver immediately following that Seattle trip. So just getting in the mileage before the end of the year. I need to sign up.
You got to sign up. Get that status, man. You got to get it.
I know. The problem is that I keep on using different airlines. So like I'm not loyal to one because pricing.
Uh-huh.
I have like three different airlines that I fly the most, and I have credit cards with all of them. So like I've tacked on all, you know, get 25,000 extra miles if you spend $1,000 in the first 90 days or whatever. And I'm like, sign me up, buy my plane tickets, do all of that. And so I have a bunch of miles, which is lovely. What I need to do is what you've done with like the Marriott or the Hilton points. I need to sign up for those points and then start staying at some hotels and get those points racked up so I can start getting those nice cushy rooms, the upgrades, all of that fun stuff.
It really comes in so handy, and we will not turn this into a travel podcast, but let me just say, if you're not getting your points for your trips and your hotel stays and your so I am a hypocrite. I do not do points for rental cars. I should, because I guess there are things, but back when I started, it just didn't seem like it was worth it. But yeah, hotel wise, I just went to San Francisco. Our friends of the show, Media Meltdown, Sailor and Edmund, also known as Piranha and Kafka X, just got married. And I had the privilege of, you know, attending their wedding, and I put all three nights of my stay in San Francisco downtown, you know, on the Hilton points thing that I had for free. And it was a nice stay, and it wasn't crazy, and I ended up paying because, like, you know, charge your room, like drinks or, you know, at the bar or whatever. So I still paid them money. They got my money, but I didn't have to pay for the hotel. So yes, you got to do it. The other thing I will say, if you travel a lot, like myself, and I guess maybe Pat soon, and definitely BJ, find a credit card that gets you into a lounge. Lounges, if you ever buy a drink or eat food at an airport, it adds up. And if you just get a lounge card with, like, you know, you're going to pay like an annual fee, free booze, free food. You're not always going to be guaranteed to get a lounge at an airport, especially if you fly to small regional airports. But when you get a good airport and they got a nice lounge, oh my God, it makes all the difference.
Yeah, I think my Delta card gives me 2 lounge tickets per year or something like that without having any like real big fees attached to it. So I definitely need to take. But you know what? You know me. You've known me long enough. You know I don't get to an airport early enough to use.
Well, see, that's the other thing. Yeah, you got to get a little early. But for layovers, too, I'm going to be going to a layover somewhere. Charlotte, I think, actually coming up. And I'm going to go to their lounge there. It's great. Delta actually has some of the best lounges. Amex also, since Centurion lounges are fantastic. And I think Chase Sapphire also has really good lounges. So you got options. But you should definitely check out the one in Seattle if you're going to have time. That Delta Lounge is lit.
Yeah, I'm flying back red-eye. I'm flying back overnight. So I'll have plenty of time where I can go drop off my rental car and then hang out at the airport and maybe do the lounge there. So that might be a good one to be able to kind of take advantage of. But speaking of Chase Sapphire, I didn't know that there's like a Chase Sapphire portal where you can book, like, regardless of whether you're using your Chase card, you can book your travel through that portal and take advantage of all the points. So you can book on different airlines, but still kind of like funnel your points into the same place. So a former colleague of mine, she was mentioning that I need to look into that, because part of me getting this promotion at work and was thinking I'm going to be traveling a lot more. I haven't yet, but you know, I can also do that for personal enjoyment, and you know, we'll make it work. So this travel portion of Flame On has been brought to you by Chase Sapphire. Unfortunately not. But no, great. I mean, we'll just count that as our weather segment for
yes, this episode. I'm surprised we didn't do a weather segment with all the crazy weather going on. But yeah, no, that's for other shows to cover.
We didn't want to tip off that, you know, we are actually the ones controlling the hurricanes.
Oh my God. I swear, she's just nuts. This is a coded reference to a certain Congress critter out of, Georgia, right? Mm-hmm. Ooh, she's got three names. She looks like Barney Rubble. If you don't know what I'm talking about, Google Barney Rubble, Georgia Congresswoman. You'll find her.
Or as Jasmine Crockett calls her, B6.
B6.
Mm-hmm. Bleach blonde.
Oh, yes. Yes. Love that.
Bad built butch body. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So just B6 for short. But anyway, yes. So there is a lot going on. If you have been impacted or afflicted by any of the hurricanes, and there is anything that we can do, if there are GoFundMes, if there are links and resources that we can share, please reach out to us. Let us know. We'll be happy to amplify those. You know, donate what we can. But you know, we obviously have ties in Florida. You know, we have ties in North Carolina. Please. If we can help in any way, let us know. We are here to try to amplify those voices and make sure that we can do what we can to make a difference, a positive impact in the world, especially after hurricanes and tragedies like this happen and devastate families and locations out there. I know Bear Happy Hour Charlotte is doing the day after we record this, so we'll have passed by the time the episode drops, but they are doing a fundraising effort with I think the Beer Can Bears from like the Asheville area, doing you know, they have a list of things that they're asking for people to bring to Bear Happy Hour and help donate. So if you have anything like that that's coming up or that we can post about, please let us know. We'll be happy to. So with all of that portion out of the way, our intro segment, we are here to chat about the month in pop culture, the things that we've been seeing, playing, watching, doing that, have tickled our fancy. And we are going to share those with you all because that's what you're here for. You're to hear us talk about pop culture. So I'm going to throw it over to Brian for our first topic and, what you going to talk about on this episode?
So I was really tempted to talk about Rings of Power, which is why I threw that in earlier. But needless to say, great show. You should go watch it if you're a Tolkien nerd. But what I really want to spend a little bit of time talking about is a show that is unfortunately now canceled. But I'm still going to talk about it because it's a great show and you got to watch it. It's called Chaos. It's on Netflix. You probably saw marketing with Jeff Goldblum playing Zeus, the king of the gods, in this very modern sort of like American Gods, but all the Greek edition. Basically, it's a great cast of various folks playing gods from the Greek, mostly Greek pantheon, and also some not so god, demigods, you might say, people who encounter the gods in the Greek and a few Roman myth legends, whatever. And this show was written by Charlie Covell. And they've written some interesting television that I am not as familiar with, but they're queer, they're non-binary, the end of the fucking world. That's what it is. And I really want to see it after now seeing this show. But fantastic showrunner just took the Greek pantheon stories and did some really neat modern sort of reimaginings of them. Jeff Goldblum, obviously, killed it as Zeus, not like muscle bound, crazy, you know, whatever Zeus, but this Zeus who's almost a little Trumpian and his kind of paranoia about power and losing power. And it's got some great little moments of his story, but Janet McTeer plays Hera. She's fantastic. Anytime she shows up, Killian Scott, who I wasn't as familiar with, plays Orpheus, a character that is somewhat near and dear to brothers of a certain fraternity that some of us are a part of. Nabon Rizwan is Dionysus, another character that shows up in a lot of mythology, especially somewhat connected to Orpheus. We got David Thewlis, always a pleasure. He shows up. He's Hades. Again, not like the muscle-bound or dark, brooding overlord, kind of dark, you know, whatever. This Hades is kind of more of a bureaucrat, almost, kind of managing the underworld in this sort of bureaucratic Orwellian sort of thing. Cliff Curtis, who I've seen before, but I don't know what his what he's been in, but he's Poseidon. Billy Piper shows up almost unrecognizable as Cassandra, sort of that, you know, mythic character who is always kind of foretelling the future, but no one would listen to her. And so you have this, it's set in Heraklion, Crete, which I've been to. I was like, holy crap, I've actually been there. And it's, you know, a very not our world. It's a world where the Greek gods are like real. And they kind of are, you know, sort of, the stories are focused on Heraklion, which is very much a Greece, but Greece, like modern and not Anglify, but there's a, it's a diverse group of characters, which I appreciate it. Another character shows up, Susie Izzard, formerly, I think they don't dead name themselves. I think they still have a lot of promo out. So it's, you know, it's Eddie, but now Susie, in case you didn't see the connection there. Susie plays one of the Fates. The Muses. No, shoot. Which is it? What's the Fates? It's the Fates. It's the ones with the thread and the cutting and the life predicting. Yeah. God, there's just so many great characters. So all these interacting stories, all these stories that sort of involve like worshiping the gods, the pantheon, and the sort of idea that humanity is like God fuel somewhat, like the lives of people kind of fuel their immortality in some ways. And it's a little bit of a political intrigue with the ruler of Crete, King Minos, which if you're familiar is, I think it's Minos, right? The Minotaur and the labyrinth. What's it called? The labyrinth or the maze?
The labyrinth.
It is labyrinth. Okay. So yeah, there's elements of that story. You get Icarus and Daedalus sort of woven in there. You get some Amazons. You actually see Hippolyta, but not Wonder Woman's Hippolyta. Obviously, this is the actual, you know, this is the actual Amazons. No, this is the original Amazon myth, Hippolyta. And they're kind of like militant warriors. They have like this really rugged sort of like it's less glamorous than Wonder Woman's Amazons, I would say. But I think my favorite stories were the ones that touched on the underworld. And it's mainly Orpheus. When I saw that they were basically going to retell the Orpheus legend of, you know, following his wife Eurydice down into the underworld to bring her back, I was really excited. I was really familiar with that myth. And I was like, oh, this is going to be really cool. And it is, but it takes some swerves that you don't expect. And it's like Orpheus is a heroic figure in the myth of his myth. He makes mistakes, but I mean, overall, his intentions are pure. Well, in this version, his intentions are they're something. They're not pure. They're not like entirely like they're not bad, but he does certain things along the way that are like questionable and sort of make Orpheus into a little bit more of a flawed figure. And it takes Eurydice's story and actually does empower her almost more as a character, which is fantastic because she honestly gets very much not empowered by her myth. And she has agency. And actually, there's some spoilers here. You guys will go watch it. You won't be too ruined, but she has a great sort of interaction with another myth I was not familiar with, that is about, it's the first trans man myth, I guess, that we have, at least from the Western tradition. And it's Canaeus. Canaeus was an Amazonian in the original telling, and actually this is a Roman, this is Ovid, I think, wrote this. She originally was raped by Neptune. Yeah, Neptune, not Neptune slash Poseidon. And so when that happens, Because, of course, Greek and Roman myths are all kinds of horrible, you know, God rapes you and then you get a prize. Their prize is they get to become whatever they want. They get to, you know, and basically Canaeus is like, I want to be a man because I want to be, again, this is kind of old, you know, old timey mythology. I want to be strong and able to defend myself, you know, whatever. Like, get agency is what we'll interpret that as. So in this retelling, what I appreciate is what they sidestepped the whole, the rape thing didn't happen, right? Canaeus is an Amazon, though it's not made clear in like the text. It's pretty clear subtext that they betray the Amazons by becoming a man, or by, you know, identifying as a man as a child and then presumably transitioning, though they don't, like I said, they don't kind of spell that out. You have to kind of read between the lines. And the actor that played Canaeus, Mysia Butler, is a trans man as well. So really cool, interesting myth that I wasn't familiar with. And from a queer perspective, because it's not the only queer content in this. There's a little bit of Dionysus is a little bit of a pansexual, which makes sense. I think we'd all expect that, right? And then there's a lot of like non-binary sort of representations of the muses and of the fates and of this and that. But like the Canaeus story is like one of the most, like, I guess, oldest, like, trans and specifically trans male stories we have. And it's portrayed in a really nicely updated way that's still bitter and, like, bittersweet in some ways. I mean, it's tragic. I mean, basically, his mother, like, kills him. Or that's what they think. Anyway, all of it to say, really cool storytelling with the Greek and Roman mythology, mostly Greek. I am really sad it's not going to keep going because they did not. They wind down the tales. You get a nice arc. You know, people get their comeuppance. And one more thing I'll talk about and I'll come back. Prometheus is in it now. Prometheus is another story that's kind of interesting. Kind of sometimes it kind of stands alone. It doesn't get as tied up in the more Zeus and Hera stuff, but it all relates. And what I love about Prometheus in this story is he is the muse, or he is the chorus. So he breaks the fourth wall almost from the beginning. And so like the chorus in Greek plays, the chorus was always breaking the fourth wall and kind of helping the audience figure out what was going on. That's the Prometheus character in this. And I thought that was brilliant. Perfect way to do it. No one will like really care that it's a tie back to the chorus. It's just like Deadpool-ish, you know, fourth wall breaking, whatever. But it's a neat nod back to Greek storytelling. So, but yeah, the story's end. There's a resolution of sorts. You kind of see what could come next. It definitely starts to tease the next thing that could come from this show. And I don't know. Hopefully there is a way to keep it going. It's predominantly, I think, a lot of British actors. And I know Charlie Cavell is British. So I don't know if it's something with the budget they had that just no one but Netflix could really pull this off. And to get some of the actors like Jeff Goldblum, whatever, but I really want more. It would be really neat to see how they kept going in this universe, weaving in some additional storytelling, different myths, and even expanding the pantheon a little bit and kind of getting out of just the Greek and Roman stuff. But yeah, I would say even if you don't care, I mean, you know, it's canceled, you only get one season. It's a great miniseries. If you're into Greek mythology or mythology in general, and you're interested in queer mythology to some extent, queer storytelling, you guys got to check out Chaos on Netflix. And yeah, let me know what you think, if it's as exciting for you as it was for me.
All I kept thinking while you were talking about this was Xanadu on Broadway.
Oh,
one of the muses and all of that. Like, it just made me think of all the times that I saw Xanadu on Broadway and how much I love that show. But I love how you started by saying you've probably seen the advertising for this show on Netflix, to which I respond, what advertising? Which might be why it's got canceled after one season. So
I saw a lot of ads before it came out because, it was Jeff Goldblum, and maybe the algorithm just knows I really like Jeff Goldblum. I don't know. I thought it was pretty well advertised before it came out. I think the problem is, it's the timing, and I think the material was maybe a little too, I mean, it's Greek mythology is kind of dark and out there and messy. And I don't know. I could have seen it catch fire like Game of Thrones almost. It's got sort of that Sopranos, Game of Thrones family intrigue with the gods. But yeah, I mean, it didn't happen. So I don't know. But I really hope people check it out, though. And whatever Charlie Covell does next, I'm a fan. I'm going to go back and watch their old stuff and see what they do next, because they're really, really cool, really talented.
Eric, what are your thoughts? I saw you winding up to say something, and I cut you off. My apologies.
Well, because you tied it to Broadway, so I was going to tie it to Broadway as well. Just thinking the second you said Orpheus, I'm like, way down, Hades Town, way down under the ground.
Mm-hmm.
I saw some advertisements for it on pre-videos and YouTube, like little things here and there, but no, there's never a big push, and it just goes back to one of the drawbacks of dropping full seasons at a time. What, right? Because this dropped all at once,
I believe.
Did
it? No, you know what? Wait, did it? I don't know. I can never remember. Like, I didn't watch it like all at once. I didn't go through the whole thing. Yeah. So yeah, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, you can't build an audience week to week. It's either there or not. They don't give shows enough time to build an audience. And
yeah, they're hoping that like people like us and people who are more high profile influencers will pick it up and talk about it and share it with people, and it'll build a buzz, you know, somehow. And in this day and age, I know that budgets are tight, and I mean, this show is definitely expensive. But like, it's just, like you said, you don't give it enough chance to build an audience. And we shouldn't be surprised that streaming services are doing this. The networks have been doing this mercilessly, some way worse than others, for years. And that was just the way the business went. So, I mean, you know, it is what it is. I'm sad, but there's also now like shows coming back from 2 decades ago and getting revamped and whatever. So who knows? Maybe Chaos will become a cult classic and people will want to watch it. I don't know. But if you're a fan of queer storytelling, I mean, again, we're talking about the queer angles on these topics, and I was really jazzed to find out some part of mythology that was queer that I had no clue about. So that was really neat.
Oh, that was the other part that made me think of Xanadu, because some of the Muse sisters are played by men in the Broadway show, mm-hmm. because it's just fun. cool. So Chaos currently on Netflix, unfortunately canceled for season 2, but go check it out. Does it leave you on a big cliffhanger? Like, are you going to be really mad when you get to the end of it and be like, damn, I wanted to see how this ends?
You do want to see how it continues, but it gives a nice inflection point, so to speak, of like storylines kind of hit a point and you go, okay, I you know, the characters keep doing their thing and that's interesting. It actually, this is the one thing I don't want to spoil too much, but they actually finally get to why it's called Chaos, because at first you just know one part of that. And then you finally find the other part of that. And it's like, oh, now we can really start rocking here. But I mean, again, it's frustrating because there should be more. I would love more, but it ends a lot in a certain way. So
I guess if you just want Greek myths, you'll have to go watch Percy Jackson.
Oh, well, I don't know. Is that any good? Isn't that Disney too?
Yeah.
Was it got like a, is this like season 3 coming up or something like that?
No, season 2 is coming up.
Oh, it's just 2? Oh, wow. I thought, okay. Yeah. I only know anything about it because Edge, Adam Copeland, is in the series. And back like 20 years ago, I was a big Edge fan. And then, you know, I'm slightly gotten back into wrestling. But anywho. Yeah. All right. Chaos, Netflix. Good to know. Eric, what you got for us?
So, a movie that came out in June just dropped on Disney Plus a little while ago, and it's Inside Out 2, which I didn't see in theaters, but now that it's streaming, I thought I'd give it a look-see. I was also a little trepidatious going into it because I liked the original Inside Out so much. And some of the Pixar sequels lately, I haven't been overly impressed with. But this was a very pleasant surprise. And while I guess I can understand why it ended up making so much money, I wouldn't necessarily place it as the highest grossing film of 2024, which it is, and is also now the eighth highest grossing film of all time.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
Yep. Okay. It's made $1.693 billion worldwide. Yeah.
Damn. Did Riley's dad get that hot that the gays needed to go see it? Like,
just kind of maintained his level of hotness.
That's enough. That's enough.
In universe, it's only been 2 years since the first film. So, but Riley is now 13 years old. And the night before, she is going to a hockey camp before her freshman year in high school. That's when her puberty alarm goes off, which causes some chaos in the headquarters in her head and also allows for new emotions to come in and wreak havoc, including anxiety, envy, embarrassment, and ennui. And there's an extra emotion which tries to pop in a couple times, but they refuse her, and that's nostalgia. And they're like, you're here about 20 years too early, nostalgia. But the way they kind of build extra is that all of Riley's memories have begun to shape her core beliefs now, which is forming her sense of self, which is the big kind of device that's used to keep her together. And it's interesting to see her maturing in a way and these more complex emotions coming in and trying to push out the more simple emotions from the first film. And it's really anxiety's show. While they aren't portrayed as a villain, they're definitely the antagonist of the movie. And just near the end, in the first film, you had the breakdown when she comes back from almost running away and sadness kind of lets it all out, and you're given that moment of, yes, you need sadness. You can't just be happy all the time. And in the end, it's if you let anxiety rule everything, it's just no good. And it's just this huge realistic panic attack that Riley has towards the end of the film. That I certainly related to as someone who's had panic attacks before. To see, have either of you seen Inside Out 2?
Not yet. I heard it was good. The fact that there's an ennui emotion makes me kind of giggle internally. I'm just waiting for Inside Out 3 when, you know, bipolar depression and, you know, full out clinical depression show up as the new emotions. But no, I forgot that it had made its way onto Disney Plus, I think, until last night when I went to watch Agatha. And it's one of the, like, the, I ended up scrolling past it as the header on Disney Plus. So mm-hmm. I will be checking it out soon because, like you, I did enjoy Inside Out a lot. I think I first saw it on an airplane and I was like, okay, this is pretty cute, but I do want to watch the second one for sure.
Yeah. And while there are, you can read into it to see some queerness in Riley and one of the other hockey girls. The filmmakers have even said that the queerness had to be toned back after, for some reason, Pixar thinks that the reason that the Buzz Lightyear movie didn't work is because there was a queer kiss in it. So, of all the reasons that Buzz Lightyear didn't make money, that was it.
Of course it was, right? No.
Yeah. But it's a good movie. I'd give it probably 4 3/4 flames.
Wow. Almost the perfect.
Yeah.
That's impressive. That's a good rating for a film. But we'll have to, dear listeners, if you've watched it, share your feedback. Let us know what you thought, what your maybe who you related to. Out of the new emotions, Eric, who were you most aligned with? Who was the you in the new cast?
Probably embarrassment.
It's like we're playing a verbal game of tag yourself, apparently. Tag yourself. I'm on we. I feel like even just seeing the promotional stuff, I'm like, all right, on we. I'm down. I'm here.
Yeah.
Very nice. Brian, are you planning on seeing it?
Well, you know, it's funny. I haven't seen a Pixar film in a long time, and I don't know. But I am interested in it, and I would like to see one. I haven't seen one either, the first one. So, like, I have to do both. It'll be a double feature someday. I don't know when.
Niles!
I know.
That's crazy talk. That was just crazy talk.
Yeah.
You know when you break out the Jocelyn Fox gasp, that is just no other words. No other words suffice. Well, all right. Well, report back to us when you've had a chance to watch your Inside Out double feature. And do not come back to us and say, I'm waiting for the third one to come out and just do a trilogy watch. Awesome. So Inside Out 2 now playing on Disney Plus. Go check it out. Let us know what you thought in the comments. Dear listeners, we appreciate you checking out this episode and every episode of Flame On that you listen to. Check us out online, flameonshow.com, where you can find all of our social buttons. You can find our Tea Fury shop. You can find all of that good stuff there for you. We appreciate you listening. We appreciate your support. If you'd like to go over to your favorite podcast listening app, give us a 5-star review, preferably. And they'll leave a little comment or a little review. We would appreciate that. FlameOnShow.com is where it's at.
Okay, which is clearer? One or two?
Two.
Three or four?
Four.
Diabetes or high blood pressure?
Huh?
Every eye tells a story, including giving us a clearer picture of your overall health. At Boots Opticians, our eye tests and advanced OCT eye scans can help spot over 10 health conditions, helping to open your eyes to a healthier future. Book an eye test today. Boots Opticians. See what's possible.
It's a Sunweb holiday.
Hi there. We're Sunweb and we love ski holidays. That feeling of cruising down beautiful slopes. It's a feeling we want to share. We want you to get the most out of your ski holiday. That's why with Sunweb, your lift pass is always included, which saves you serious money. That's money for a round of drinks at the apres, treating yourself at the spa, or maybe to just put in your piggy bank. Discover how much you can save at sunweb.co.uk.
All right. Final topic is mine. I have decided that I am doing video games. It's been quite a while since I've been the one to talk about video games. Probably about a year or so since we talked about Tears of the Kingdom, which I can't
believe. So it must be a completely different genre and IP and everything, right?
I mean, why would I ever go back to that well? Yeah, no. Legend of Zelda Echoes of Wisdom has come out for the Nintendo Switch, and I will be honest, I almost did not purchase this game. I almost talked myself out of playing this game, because when we talked about Tears of the Kingdom, one of my biggest complaints was that I was not smart enough for it. I'm still not really 100% smart enough for it. A lot of times you just put a bunch of tree trunks together and you make a bridge and you cross over rather than finding a new solution. Lowest common denominator, you find one thing that works for you. And when I saw the trailer and the previews and all of the lead up for Echoes of Wisdom, it reminded me of me playing Tears of the Kingdom. You get one thing and you just use it to solve everything. And that was the bet. That was what was shown in the initial playthrough footage. And I just didn't know. I just didn't know if I wanted to. But I'm glad that I did. So Legend of Zelda Echoes of Wisdom is a 2024 action-adventure game developed by Nintendo. And I'm going to say Grezzo. I don't know if that's how you pronounce the company's name. But Nintendo and Grezzo, and published by Nintendo for the Nintendo Switch. It was released on September 26, 2024. It is the first main Legend of Zelda game with Princess Zelda as the main playable character. Players control Zelda on a quest to save Link in the Kingdom of Hyrule using the Tri-Rod, a magical artifact provided by the fairy, Tri, who assists her. The visual style is similar to that of the 2019 remake of The Legend of Zelda, Link's Awakening, which Grezzo also developed. Echoes of Wisdom was released worldwide on the Nintendo Switch on September 26, 2024, and received generally favorable reviews from critics who praised it for its visuals, soundtrack, story, Zelda as the protagonist, and new mechanics and gameplay innovation. I cannot speak to the soundtrack because anybody that's been around me when I play video games, I usually don't have the sound up. I usually will play other music or listen to something else. But overall, do not shake your head at me, sir. I'm very happy with this game. So, Brian and Maddie were very kind to have bought me Link's Awakening early on in the pandemic. I am sad to say that I don't think I've played it. I think I maybe have started it, but have not played it. I never played Link's Awakening on the Game Boy either. So
it was my favorite Zelda for a long, long time. I think still might be my favorite Zelda.
Really?
I didn't play Breath or Tears because they don't seem like my jam.
Yes. Jacuse. Yeah. I'm just gonna start saying things I don't understand. Wow. Mm-hmm. Eric, I'm so sad. I'm so saddened by this news right now. Anyway, have you listened to the Tortured Poets Department? At least tell me, at least save my soul.
Still not yet, no.
Jesus fucking Christ. Leave meeting. Leave. This podcast is being disbanded right now. Done. Oh, that's right. When Brian was talking about Cassandra, I was like, there's a whole song and it references that. And I was like, maybe Eric will get it. No, guess not. Never mind. Anywho. All right. It was a great, like, what, 12-year run on Flame On? I'll see you guys later. Okay. Fine. All right. Well, I'm glad to hear that was your favorite. I never played it. I was very much I honestly did not really play any of the handheld Zelda games. For being as big of a Zelda fan as I have been from the first one with the gold cartridge and all of that, I actually referenced that in a work chat today. I never played the Game Boy, like the handheld ones, until A Link Between Worlds on the 3DS. A great fucking game, BT Dubs. If you haven't played that one, I highly recommend A Link Between Worlds. But yeah, I've seen gameplay for it. So, and in, is it Tears of the Kingdom, has the Link's Awakening outfit, which makes Link look like a very weird version of that new art style for the remake. But I kind of had an idea, a concept. I knew of how the game would maneuver, but there are things that have changed with the mechanic of the Tri-Rod and creating these echoes. So I'm not going to get much into the story, because if you haven't played it yet, you should experience the story as it happens and really get a feel for it. But when you get control of Zelda as a character, for the most part, like, and really start the adventure into the quote unquote tutorial portion of the game, you get the Tri-Rod, you learn how to make echoes and how to learn the echo function and be able to make these echoes to solve puzzles and continue your story. You do get to a point where very quickly you find a bed and you can use that bed for just about anything and solving any puzzle. Like, literally, it's just something that you can do. I still don't love that, but I've been trying to avoid using that as my catch-all problem-solving technique. And I'm also trying to do all of this stuff on my own. I did, however, look up one thing, because I was like, I know that obviously a lot of people have talked about this one treasure chest in one of the dungeons, because when I was searching for something else, I was trying to figure out one other thing. And whenever I was looking up that area, it kept on saying, how do you get that chest? Essentially like emphasizing that one meaning. Okay, so I know that there's a thing behind it. Anywho, overall, it's an adorable game. The art style is the art style. It's cute. Not my favorite, but not horrible. I like it better than Wind Waker. That is probably my least favorite art style for any of the Zelda games. They redeemed themselves with cel shading in Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom, but I did not like the cel shaded cartoon version of Link. From a positive standpoint, I think the gameplay is fun. I think that the way to do things is creative and innovative, and you easy enough to figure out how to make solutions. I'm sad because I can't watch Quinbo Bin is one of the YouTube channels, like the playthroughs that I watch a lot of, but he has put up like 5 different Echoes of Wisdom videos and I have not been able to watch them because I don't want to spoil anything for myself, to the point where I watched the first video through a certain point and then I thought he was going to go to one place and I was like, okay, I've gone there, this should be fine. And he went to the ranch instead. And I was like, fuck, I got to turn the video off. I'll get back to it eventually. But it's fun. It is entertaining. It is creative. It does make you think of, how do I solve this? Plus, you can get to areas by climbing on things and climbing over what were barriers in other games. So if you played the remake of Link's Awakening, trees and rock faces are normally barriers to different sections where you have to find a path that leads to this area. Zelda said, fuck that shit. I am the princess and I'm going to go over this and make my way there faster. And it's kind of fun. It takes you to places and do things that you wouldn't normally do. The downside, my biggest negative right now, fighting is the biggest pain in my goddamn ass, and I have gotten to a point where I died multiple times trying to fight a couple of fucking enemies because it is so incredibly okay. Slight spoiler, but I'm not gonna really dive into it. You get a sword fighter form, so because there's this like the rift world, the still world, you get to a point where you get to transform into a Link-esque figure. But you're still Zelda, but you have this like shadowy form of like a sword fighter a la Link with the Hylian shield and a sword. But essentially like how you've had magic meters in other games where you can only use your magic until it's depleted, the sword fighter form. And I think that there's another game similar to this that has a mechanic like this that I'm not thinking of right now. But that is the easiest way to fight because you can actually physically fight things. You have a sword, you get other weapons eventually, you do things, but you only have a limited time to use it. So instead of that, you fight other enemies, you kill them, and you get their echoes, and then you essentially turn the enemies on themselves. You send moblins and clubbins and boarlins and whatever these things are. They suck at fucking fighting. They suck while you're fighting them, too, because it's like, it takes forever for a moblin to want to throw a spear. So you're constantly trying to get them to, like, you're respawning them, you're trying to get them into position. The funny part is that as Zelda, you can pick up these like moblins and throw them. Hysterical. But it makes it really frustrating, especially when you have flying enemies like Keese who go on a certain pattern and then dive, because then you spawn a Keese to fight them as your only aerial being, and they're on a completely different cycle. And then they never fucking hit anything. And then it's supposed to be that if you Z-lock on them, your echoes will target and fight them. They don't. And it makes it really fucking frustrating sometimes. That's my biggest downside. Honestly, that's my biggest downside. Because combat is such a thing in the Legend of Zelda games. You want to find and you need to get treasure chests. And they have, Eric, you haven't played it, but Brian, you would know that like they have the moblin camps where you have to defeat all of the enemies and then the chest opens up. So when you can't, when you have trouble fighting enemies, it makes it really frustrating. And then you die, and then they respawn, and you are just like, you're spinning your wheels.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like they tried something new based on maybe what had worked in the other two newer Zelda games, and it's just not successful. I mean, for the type of gameplay that you enjoy, but I'm wondering if this was also sort of like, we're going to try to make it so it's more puzzle solvey than hack and slash, but sounds like you do both anyway. So
definitely there is a lot of puzzle. There is a lot of like, even the mini games, like I came across this one guy in like the mountainous area between Gerudo Desert and the one of the forest areas. And there's a bunch of levels and there's all these rocks and scorpion or like Molduga type enemies. You remember the ones from, like Ocarina of Time, those like yellow circular creatures, like millipede looking ones.
Yes. Oh, what are those called?
Whatever they're called. They're like the big millipedes.
Yeah.
So there's a bunch of those around. And then you talk to the guy and he's like, I'll hide acorns. I'll scatter acorns around. Find them all. You win a prize. And you have to like avoid the enemies, but also move rocks out of the way and climb beds or do whatever you have to do to like get to the higher areas, and the faster you do it, the better your prize is. So like there's a lot of like that incorporated into like the puzzle solving is all over the place. But when you do encounter an enemy area, like I want to be able to fight better fight easier, and the deadlier enemies cost more triangles to create, so you can only send like one in. And then if he's being a pain in the ass and not really fucking, you know, getting on a cycle that works, it's frustrating.
Yeah.
It feels like I'm really harping on it, but it is a small part of the overall game and not something that is detracting me from continuing to play.
Do you feel that this game, so is this like a continuation of Link's Adventure? Is it sort of feel like it's in that or Link to the Past kind of Zelda canon, or does it just kind of like all the Zelda games, doesn't matter, it's just sort of there?
And so it is not a Link's Awakening sequel, because for the most part we think that's when Link was dead for a little while, or at least on life support, because Link's Awakening is fake. It's all a dream and we're not quite sure what's going on in there. I think the consensus is it is closest tied to a link to the Past, because in the prologue, when you are Link, there Ganon looks most like that big round pig demon form, and Zelda's in a crystal, and it kind of ties visually most to a Link to the Past, where the seven sages or the crystals and all that good stuff. But I don't think there's been any real conversation about where this fits on the timeline, if it really does fit on the timeline. And not everything is like a direct correlation to a link to the past, but there are a lot of those same familiar things. Like, it's not Lon Lon Ranch, but the ranch is there. They produce milk and they've got horses. So there's a lot of the familiarity. Do you remember, like, what was it, Malin? Malin and Talon?
Or
was
Yeah.
So you have some of that. Like, they're not the same people, but I think it's meant to strongly evoke a link to the past with the art style of Link's Awakening remake.
Mm-hmm. Which is probably really nice. I mean, I did play Link's Awakening a little bit. I did not go too far into it because I don't know. I was something of, who knows what was going on. But like, yeah, it looks beautiful on the Switch as like this kind of retro style, you know. So I want to play it someday. We'll see when I get to it. I hope you keep playing it and it's not too frustrating.
Yeah, no, I'm definitely going to continue. I want to beat this game. From what I've heard, because a couple of my friends and friends from like trivia at the bar got it and started playing it right away and have said that it is a short game, which may be a little bit longer for me because I die or I'm starting to die a little bit more now. I was doing very well with not dying much in the early goings. I'm like 2/3 of the way through the initial part of the quest. And then from there, it should go into like the castle moment. And then, you know, Zelda games, there's always like, let's do the, you have to go to these couple of places first. And then something happens at the castle. And that spawns like the second half of the game and all of that good stuff. So I'm still on the first portion of it. There's, because it really does kind of feel like, I think, I for some reason I'm blanking on a lot of the Link to the Past stuff, but I feel like in Link to the Past it was the three pendants first,
yeah,
and then
you had to get the Master Sword, and then you had
and then you were frozen for 7 years until you until you became big again. No, but yeah, it feels very much like that. Like, go to these three dungeons first, do this, and then it's like there's going to be that piece, and you move on, and you do all of this stuff. I know that there is something that happens at Hyrule Castle that then starts the second piece of it. I was watching a video about like the amiibo drops, and the guy that was doing the video was very cautious of spoilers and not talking about what the incident is. But you get a point where early on in the game where you can start using amiibos and they drop one set of items. But then after, there's a plot point at Hyrule Castle. Then they spawn, you get a second screen saying that you get different things now and can spawn better items and rarer drops with amiibo. So I am excited. I am like any good faggot. I love me a princess that you can play in a game. Give me Peach. I was Peach anytime I could in Super Mario Brothers 2 when that shit came out for Nintendo. How many fucking years ago? My gay ass was just that pink fucking pixie floating across the screen as much as I could. Can I tell you, just as a quick side note, I know Brian loves the tangents. Legitimately, the funny part is not even joking about this. I was watching Ryukar is the channel, and then he has a Ryu like second channel where he does like old school playthroughs, and like it's a series called Debunking the Difficulty. So he plays games like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles for NES and Battletoads, all the games from our childhood that we couldn't fucking beat because they were so fucking hard. But now as an adult, and you can go back and look at it and be like, it's not that difficult. And I'm like, fuck you. Yes, it was. Go back to being an 8-year-old child and playing these games. That Battletoads section with the surfboard, like the hover surfboard, with the walls that would blink and then show up, and he was smashing. I don't think I ever beat that.
I know I didn't. As many times as I ended up renting that game, and again, that's the thing. You were renting games back then, so you had them for like one or two nights. but it's not like you could sit down and play it straight for 8 hours because you all had to share the one TV you all had. So,
oh yeah,
correct. But one of the games that he played was, I guess, supposed to be like, I think it was a port or some sort of version of Doki Doki Panic, which is what Super Mario Brothers 2 in the US was. And I did not, one, I did not realize that some of the most recognizable and like beloved Mario Brothers characters never are from Doki Doki Panic. Because Shy Guys, like the direct, literally like the direct port over, they just changed the characters, everything else, and like they changed like one other thing, I forget, like they added in like one, like they changed one or two other things, but otherwise Birdo, like Birdo, Shy Guys, like all of these are from, like directly pulled from Doki Doki Panic, and then became these massive icons of the Mario Brothers franchise, because like it's just insane to me. Anywho, tangent over. But Echoes of Wisdom, good game. I recommend it. I will report back once I've finished it, because I'll probably try to do as much in the game as possible. I'm not 100% there. Like, I'm not going to sit there and be like, I need to. I'm definitely never going to collect every fucking Korok in Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom. That is 1,900 Korok seeds that I never, ever need in my life. I'll probably never finish Trial of the Sword in Breath of the Wild either. But I try to get as much as I can. I want to, you know, get all the smoothie recipes. There is a stamp collecting, like, side quest. I like that there are side quests in this game, because I don't feel like there were a lot of those in like the old school Zelda games, like Link to the Past. Like there were some little things that you would do here and there, but the way that it's created and crafted out feels like Tears of the Kingdom and Breath of the Wild. So it feels like a nice mixture of Link's Awakening aesthetic, Link to the Past in those Zelda games in the content, and then a bit of the Tears of the Kingdom, Breath of the Wild mixture. And it gives me the happies. I'm enjoying it. So if you have played it, dear listeners, let me know. Let's commiserate about how shitty the enemies are when they're trying to fight for you. And we'll see if we get Brian to play it in the meantime. Eric, if Link's Awakening was your jam, I think you would like this. I would suggest playing this game. Just as an FYI. All right. We've reached the last segment of the podcast. It's our one-ups. It's the things that are giving us life. It probably sounds really bad on the audio, but hey, I'm going to keep it there because why not? So here's where we give you a little thing that we've enjoyed and we want to shout out here. I'm going to go the other way around. Brian, what is your one-up?
So I just started a show and it is just out on... Oh gosh, it's not. No, it's not Netflix. Woo. It's Max. I was like, oh no, another doomed to fail. So I really like the work of Armando Annucci. He is the, I think he's British, even though he sounds Italian. Most of his shows are British shows. Did Veep for the US. Avenue 5, which was that weird couple seasons space comedy with... oh my God, the house actor. You know, that guy.
Hugh Laurie,
thank you. He's got like this sort of style that's very walk and talk and really fast dialogue. And usually it's sort of process oriented. So like Veep's about vice president. Avenue 5 is about being like kind of a cruise ship director, captain. Anyway, cast of characters, a really smart writing. He didn't create the show, but... he is a producer on it, and so it's very much got kind of his style. And as is, it was directed by Sam Mendes of American Beauty fame and other movies. So it is a satire of a very Marvel Cinematic Universe-esque sort of franchise, and it's about the making of a movie in that franchise called, I think it's Tecto is the main character. I don't remember the rest. But it's got Richard E. Grant as one of the main actors in it. And anytime he shows up in anything, I love it. So good in so many movies. But most recently, Saltburn. If you haven't seen Saltburn, I think we talked about it probably. He was so great in that. But anyway, he's in it. There's a woman who I cannot think of her name, but she was in the British Ghosts series. And I forgot what the main guy has been in, but he's been in some stuff too. Anyway, it is a skewering of what it is like to work in the Hollywood big budget sort of genre world, specifically superheroes. And it's 30 minutes in and out for each episode. It's real fast. So funny. So you can feel like, oh, this must have been from this story, or this must have come from this. Like, it's got the bones of like, oh no, this, a lot of this happened. Like, stuff just I mean, you know, I'm sure it's fictionalized and all that, but if you're interested in satire, especially satirizing the film industry, it's great. It's called Franchise, or The Franchise. Really just witty, funny, somewhat dark in certain respects, but not like super dark. I mean, it's a superhero thing, but yeah, you got to check it out. It's on Max, and again, just started. So you got, and I think that one is definitely a release it every week or so. So you by the time you hear this, there'll be a couple in the can. Go binge it, see what you think. And yeah, that's my one up.
Very nice. Very nice. Eric, what about you? What you got?
So the newest series of The Great British Bake Off started airing on Netflix, series 15. Still hosted by Noel and Allison, with Paul and Prue judging. There have been two episodes so far on Netflix.
Three, right?
I've only watched two.
Oh, no, maybe you're right. It was just a lot that happened.
So the oldest male contestant, I don't think this is the oldest contestant they've ever had, but based on his performance, maybe. Because after the signature challenge in the first episode, he had to step away because he wasn't feeling well. Ended up coming back the second episode after the signature challenge. He was like, I don't feel well, I'm gonna leave. And then after they finished baking in the second episode, the showstopper.
Oh, Eric, I hit your mute by mistake. I'm sorry. You had to unmute yourself.
Okay.
Sorry. You were talking about after the showstopper, and then I went to, I thought there was going to, I was going to sneeze, and there was another siren. I went to hit mute, and I muted you by mistake.
Okay. Then after they finished baking the showstopper, another contestant passed out and had to be treated by medical, and she wasn't back in time for judging. So Noel took her place as holding a little picture of her and stood in front of the judges while the judges did their thing. It was funny, but weird, but, yeah, I think it'll be a good season. Very queer. I think three queer males. Two for sure, because they've both said they live with their partners. And then there's one I assume is queer.
The one who brings his laundry home to his mom.
Yes.
To do. Yes. Yeah, I'm pretty sure he is. And then you have the fashion designer. And then the tall one with the glasses.
Yeah. So it should be a good season.
Yeah, I agree. That's new episodes drop on Fridays on Netflix. So go check those out. All right. I have probably the stupidest thing I've ever chosen as a one-up. And I don't know how I feel about myself for even bringing this up, bringing this to the table. So
I just found out about this over the weekend while I was with my friends.
Did you? I found out about this probably like 2 months ago, like shortly after, like I think before it really grabbed a hold of TikTok. But didn't pay much mind to it because the videos, the initial videos had like text on the screen of like my sister wanted to watch, or my dad looked at my sister's YouTube and found this video. Now she's grounded. And it was like YouTube on a being played on a Switch of all things. And the lyric video for a song playing, which was 10 drunk cigarettes. And from there, it just kind of compounded into more things. And now there's some, you know, a bunch of viral sounds and videos that go along with it. So if you haven't caught on by now, it's Girly Girl Productions, which no one knows who is behind it. Although if you go to the comment section of most any Girly Girls video, primarily on TikTok, I haven't looked at like YouTube videos, a lot of people keep trying to call out Danny Gonzalez, which makes me laugh hysterically, because if he is behind this, I'm done. I think I've brought up Danny on this podcast before. Danny Gonzalez is like late 20s commentary YouTuber, had gained popularity on Vine when that was still a thing, and then transitioned into YouTube. And is now a married father. He just had a kid not too long ago. But does commentary, usually a little bit more long-form commentary videos. And is based here in the Chicagoland area of Illinois. And has a couple of times now tried to fool his audience into thinking he was somebody else. One, as just a completely different person that he created a life for and Instagram account for, and supposedly hired on, I think originally it was supposed to be his cousin. Then he did it again, and it was like, I hired a new assistant or person to help out with the videos, and wore disguises to try to like mask his identity and fool the audience. He has also tried to create a hit viral song for the interwebs and social media under a different name with a get up, and did all these TikTok videos and did all of this. So he has garnered no trust from his audience at this point. So when there is something as ridiculous as the Girly Girl Productions videos, you get this. That's, you know, most people are just like, Danny Gonzalez, we know it's you. So if in a month or so we get a video that says I made a viral, you know, album, whatever, then we'll know that that's what it was, and we just go on with it. But after a little while, these songs have just, they have a hold on me, and they are ridiculous. I don't think I've mentioned this. Everything is AI generated. It's AI sung. It's all artificially done. So there are the least amount of fingerprints on anything as possible, except for the fact that these things are just now out there. They're not on a TouchTunes jukebox in my neighborhood, which is sad, but they are on your streaming platforms. If you look up Girly Girl Productions, I am going to give a dramatic reading of some of the lines from 10 Drunk Cigarettes, because this is the one that I've been singing the most around my house. So here we go. Getting girls rich, yes, that's a part of my plan. And I could name 10 things us girls need before we ever need a man. One new vape, 2 lines of Coke, 3 drinks from the bar, 4 more lines of Coke, 5 guys fries, 6 hits of my blunt, 7 more lines of Coke, 8 pairs of shoes, 9 BB belts, and 10 drunk cigarettes. And then honestly, my favorite part comes after the first verse where seriously, I don't need anything from a man. Actually, maybe give me some money. Mm-hmm. I don't need money from a man. I got my own, but I want money from a man. Like it just, you know, the girls, the gays and theys, we know what's up. There's like a song that talks about, I like doing coke with my friends. Like some of the shit is just ridiculous. This girly secret, which I've seen with a lot of dogs on TikTok. You know, my secret is I accidentally killed a man. I put him in my pink sparkly van. It is the most deranged and stupidest shit with the, it is the most basic, like lyrically, it is the most like adolescent musically, but for some reason it is just too fucking funny. So if you haven't checked out Girly Girl Productions, give it a listen. Let me know what you think. What I mean, obviously, Eric, what did you think when you found out about Girly Girl Productions?
I've only heard that little bit of 10 Drunk Cigarettes. So,
okay.
I have not done any sort of a deep dive because I think it may be too ridiculous for me. yeah.
I love the fact that TikTok is, and I mean, this is, you know, this is a person who is not natively on TikTok who just sees things in passing from TikTok, but it is setting the culture. It is moving these things forward into our brains. It is, and this is the latest iteration of yet another thing. And it is catchy as hell and it does get stuck and it's ridiculous and stupid, but this is the future because it's all AI. Everything is AI generated. Everything. So, welcome and to the internet.
I certainly, this in no way equates to the band I'm about to say, but because there was talent behind that and it was real music and everything like that. But when the Gorillaz first came out, and it was just this animated kind of, for most people, nobody, I mean, yeah, you could internet sleuth it out who it was, but for the most part, didn't know who it was because no one was going to interviews or like there weren't live performances or whatnot you could see. So there was a little mystery there. But again, there was talent behind that music and real people playing and singing and everything like that versus this.
Yep. You want to see something a little prophetic from the 90s, I think. It may have been early 2000s. There was an Al Pacino movie called Simone. If you haven't seen it, you're not missing a lot, except that it was way ahead of its time and you should go back and watch it and it's going to be... probably it's already happened in certain respects, but it's going to be a thing. Like I feel like it's going to be quoted and used a lot more as more of this stuff happens and we start having more like this. Girly Girls will have like an avatar at some point, or another version of that will have like a person, that a front person or front people who are actually performing, and like that's where it gets just next level bizarre. Can't wait.
Yeah, and to your point, Eric, like when Gorillaz came out, the only person we knew that was attached to it was the front man from, was it Blur, right?
Well, wasn't that, no, because Blur's front man was Gavin, right?
Oh, not, shit, who's the other one? Singer, I'm looking it up real quick there. Did I say Blur? Damon Albarn, he's the frontman and main lyricist of rock band Blur and the co-creator and primary musical contributor of the virtual band Gorillaz.
Okay.
Yeah, so I got into Gorillaz like really early. I kind of dropped off after like the second album, but that was the only person that you knew was attached to it. There may not actually be other like real contributors, or I know they've done concerts behind big like draped screens and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But yeah, absolutely. There was a lot of mystery behind it, but not to this extent where it's like, it's let's shove topics into cocaine, killing a man, girls rock, pink, glitter, and it just spits out these songs.
I'll be really impressed if it's not AI generated lyrics. It's just that they wrote it in a such a way that it sort of apes that kind of idea. Like I don't know.
Or what if it, instead of being this Danny person from YouTube, what if it's some high profile person doing some sort of scientific study on what could AI get away with? Like how popular could AI get?
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, little monsters. This is LG7.
No.
isn't Harlequin technically LG7? Or as Willem called it, LG6.5. Oh, God, there's another. We always have to have a ray chaser mention. LG6.5 is Harlequin. Although I do love the memes that came out of that where it's like, Joker, I want to kill myself. And it's like, Harley Quinn. And it's Jinx. Is this my camera? anywho. All right. So yeah, Girl or Girl Productions. Ridiculous. Really fucking stupid. But giving me life this month. I had something that was a little different for me. Dear listeners, we appreciate you taking the time to listen to our podcast. We thank you so much. We wouldn't be doing this if you weren't here listening. So we appreciate you. Check out our website, playmonshow.com. Find all of our links there. You can find our T-Fury store. Give us a rating and a review on your favorite social media platform if you feel so inclined. We would appreciate it greatly. And until next time, y'all, it's when this drops, it's my birthday. So happy birthday, me.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Happy late birthday to BJ in between. And yeah. We'll see y'all in a couple of weeks with our next podcast. Peace, bitches.
This is a message to anyone who hasn't had their coffee this morning. Guys, we've got a deal to help. At Costa, you get a rich, strong barista-made coffee. Sounds amazing, doesn't it? An oh-so-flaky all-butter croissant and a deliciously juicy innocent juice from $5.99 until 11 a.m. So get up and go grab a deal at Costa. Costa Coffee. Price stated in select stores. Exclusions apply. Subject to availability. Full T's and C's at costa.co.uk.